Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning. Hi, Russ Johnson here, Blog Talk Radio. And we are going to tap into a program pretty soon here on another channel. But in the meantime, I thought I'd come in and get things started. We are talking about alien activity, and that's a big subject because of the new release done for you by the Pentagon. Big news that's going to last for a long, long, long time.
On the evening of the 30th of October, 1938, Orson Welles directed and narrated a radio adaptation of The War of the Worlds, the novel by H.G. Wells, as part of the Mercury Theatre on the Air. Despite its relatively low audience figures, the broadcast subsequently became famous for causing mass panic amongst American citizens. That the events were fictitious, but it was clear that these warnings had gone unheeded by many. Although the listening figures themselves were relatively small, news of the alien invasion spread through a country that was nervous about impending war in Europe. Within hours of the broadcast, the billboards in New York's Times Square were flashing with reports of mass panic caused by the radio play.
There's no question about it. Everyone was upset. And I think that a lot of the people after that, including the people who are now keeping a deep, dark secret away from all of us in terms of what's happening on planet Earth with the Palladians and the Reptilians and the Greys and others. It's interesting that in 1938, when Orson Welles did that program, people panicked like you wouldn't believe, because I think most people didn't talk about alien activity up until that particular point in time. So, but let's skip ahead. In 1952, dozens and dozens of UFOs flew over the White House. Here's the report.
UFO researchers have long suspected that a government cover-up has prevented the public from knowing the full story about visitors from other planets. In 1973, for instance, the director of the FBI denied that his agency had ever investigated UFOs.
In 1976, the agency released more than 1,100 pages of UFO information that it had collected over many years. What forced the disclosure? It was the Freedom of Information Act. Tonight, in part three of our series, UFOs, the Best Evidence, George Knapp reports on other secrets that have been pried out of the government.
UFO skeptics often ask, if there are aliens visiting Earth, why don't they announce themselves by flying over the White House? The answer is, UFOs did fly over the White House twice. It happened in July 1952. As the New York Times reported, seven eerie glowing objects were spotted by pilots in the air and people on the ground. 12 different radar operators tracked the UFOs at speeds of up to 7,000 miles per hour. A week later, the objects were back again. When jets were scrambled, the lights either disappeared or zoomed away. The Air Force explained that what everyone had seen was a temperature inversion. To a man, the radar operators disagreed, but the official explanation is the one that stuck. Government explanations of UFOs are often just plain wrong. In 1965, thousands of people from Canada to Mexico watched a formation of UFOs maneuver in the skies. The Air Force said it was the constellation Orion, even though at the time Orion could only be seen from the other side of the planet. A UFO landing at White Sands Missile Base was said to be a sighting of the planet Venus, to which one UFO buff responded, it was unforgettable the night Venus landed on the gypsum flats of New Mexico.
You know, a lot of reports were like that back in the day, but it's changing now. This is what? Today is September 26, 2022. It's changing. And a lot of things are coming out of the Pentagon, and people who have been researchers for many, many, many decades are now coming to the fore. And now many of them who are still alive and with us, after all 60, 70, 80 years, they are talking about now coming to the, writing the books, reports, and going to the UFO conferences. As a matter of fact, here's a guy, Bob Lazar, he talked about it.
I am telling the truth. I've tried to prove that.
what's going on up there could be the most important event in history. You're talking about contact, physical contact and proof from another system, another planet, another intelligence. That's got to be the biggest event in history, period.
And it's real.
And it's real and it's there.
And if you haven't done your homework with Bob Lazar and John Lear and many others out there, Lyndon Mutant Howell, Stanton Friedman, I mean, all these guys have been out there for many years, decades, going to UFO conferences, writing books, doing research papers, doing the analytics on all of this, and even getting information as best as they can from the Freedom of Information Act of the government of the United States. William Tompkins has been out there for many years, and the book that he has written recently, because he passed a couple years ago, but he started his involvement with the Nordics back in 1942, which was eons ago. But now, a couple years ago, he just left us, and this is what he had to say.
People all over this planet for at least 6,000 years have been influenced by extraterrestrials, the Dracos and the Reptilians. They have taken the information that is in essentially every school on the planet, and they've modified the information. All history documentation in this country and on every country on the planet have been given lies about astronomy, lies about mathematics, lies about technical capabilities, lies about the universe, you name it, okay? Everything have been lies. Every PhD on this planet, whether they're scientific, whether they're medical, makes no difference. Every book that they read the 6 years they were in the university are lies. They're not telling the truth. They were not taught the truth. At that time, we had 34 admirals in the Navy. All of them had been through Annapolis. They learned how to learn everything about the Navy, everything about history, everything about mathematics, everything about astronomy, you name it. They learned all lies. So who did the Secretary of Navy Forrestal select for this job? Turns out Admiral Riccobata was not an American. He was born in Australia. The Secretary of the Navy selected an Australian man who had not been infected with the lies that the reptilians had taught us.
Hello?
He was freer of that. So the Secretary of the Navy was aware of this because he had been contacted by Nordic extraterrestrials, people here trying to help the United States. Okay? Very important point. So when I was selected, I hadn't been to the universities. I hadn't gotten the bad information. I hadn't been given the wrong information. And this is the reason I was selected, because I was knowledgeable of the Navy. I was knowledgeable what the threats were. But I hadn't gone to the university and picked up all the lies.
Isn't that something? Interesting. It has more to say in terms of the moon not being a planet, but an observatory by some other species who happened to have been living there for many thousands and thousands of years. And then when the astronaut Apollo 11, Neil Armstrong, got to the moon back in the 60s, he met them. But all of that's been covered up. Julian, thank you very much for joining us this morning. I got started early because the system...
Oh, good morning.
It's a little bit...
Yes, I see you started early.
Well, the only reason I started early because...
Off to a good start.
No, well, I started early because I gotta have to tap into this other system, and I still might have problems because I set it up for 12. But anyway, I don't want to go through the technical part. I kind of messed up something, I think, this morning. But anyway, let's see where we go. So thank you, though, for joining us. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good, thank you.
Okay, I appreciate you being here. You're a big help.
I didn't want to miss anything.
Yeah, well, we need you because we don't understand. The rest of us here on planet Earth, the 9 billion persons, minus maybe a half a percent, the other 99%, 99.9% of the people really don't understand all of this, the machinations, what's going on in the universe. We haven't studied it. It's all new to us, and so here we are. But you have been around for many a decades, many a eons, and so you know all of this. And so we are depending on you to educate us so that we can catch up to speed before we leave this planet. Let me do this, Julian. Let me see if I can tap into this program that's supposed to be at 12 o'clock. One second here. Let me dial it up. Da-da-da. See how successful I am on this early start. But let's see. 949-359-0954. Let's see how successful I am. Oh.
Record your message and press pound or press star to contact the operator.
Uh-huh. It seems as if they're not on yet, or I dialed in too early, or I have the wrong number. Anyway, what
then I have the number if you want
do?
To verify it.
Please,
yes.
What is it?
954-947-5497.
That's what I just dialed. I think.
Oh,
I think I got it.
That's it. That's their call-in number. I don't
okay,
think you
good.
Dialed that.
Okay, let me try it again. In the meantime, tell us, as I dial the number, thank you again for being here. What should we do as uninformed beings on this planet to catch up with you guys who have a lot more information than we have? What should we do?
Well, you know, I'm of the opinion that you start with the small things. Deal with what you can deal with, and don't worry too much about what you can't deal with. And so from my perspective, my big concern is not so much all the evils of this planet as what those evils are doing to the human soul. That, for example, we are being given now all kinds of medications for one reason or another, and many of those medications are using the mRNA system in our bodies, the messenger system, to take the medications through to the various parts of the body. This has been a practice which has been done for a very long time, and it doesn't
okay,
matter
it.
Whether we
hold,
understand
hold,
it
hold that idea. This is a super idea. Hold that, because a lot of people really need to hear exactly what you're saying. Let's see if I can go into that system now that you've given me the number.
Joining conference now.
This
call, save message, press 0. To repeat recording, press 1. To verify your recording, press 2.
Okay.
To exit, press pound.
Okay. Russell, you get.
What?
Okay.
Can you hear me?
That's what you're here. We were hearing your message recording. Okay.
The message.
Good morning, Russell.
Fine. Good morning. We have Julian with us. She's about to tell us.
Message saved.
What we need to do as uninformed species on this planet to catch up with all the things that are going on in the vast corners of the universe. And she's talking about medicines and all that, but in just a moment. So we'll get started in just a moment.
I'm going to mute the call out while you're doing that.
Okay. So why don't you introduce me or Julian, and then we'll get
you
started.
You've been muted. To unmute yourself,
about.
Press the star key twice. Mute
Hello?
Off.
Okay, Russell, I muted the whole call out, so we didn't. You said, why don't I introduce something?
Oh, that's right. Okay, introduce me, whatever.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to our daily quantum energy information and education call. Today we have Russell Johnson, who's a famed radio announcer. He has broadcast quite often. I don't know whether you're doing them every week now, as you were at one point, but I know you retired from a radio station and a very prominent announcer. And Russell has with him on the line Jillian Green, who we've had on for the last couple of weeks. And we've had some quite interesting conversations. So I'm going to turn it over to Russell and let Russell just kind of take it in the direction that you've already laid out for us. So go ahead,
okay,
Russell.
Well, great, Brett. Appreciate it. Yeah, I have been on radio and television for many, 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 many thousands of years, but I've been retired from all of that for the last decade. I'm coming back, and I'm a newbie. I'm coming back, trying it all over again. Jillian, thank you very, very much for being with us, because you have a lot of great information for us. Now, there's so many things we can discover, but let's keep it focused a bit, because you had started talking about injections and medicines and foods, and why don't you go ahead with that conversation, because that really was interesting.
Okay. Okay, well, just to quickly recap, what I was saying was that it is my view that each and every one of us should try just to deal with the small things that we can deal with, the things that we do have some control over, and not worry too much about the bigger things that we really can't affect very much. And one of the things that concerns me is not just the amount of actual evil on the planet today, because there's plenty of that. The dark forces are very powerful in our lives at this time. But the fact that recently, when I say recently, in the last 40, 50 years, it has been fairly common practice in many forms of medicine to use the mRNA system, which is a messenger system in the body. Doesn't matter if we understand it or not. Basically, it's some part of your system which carries messages to other parts of your system. And they have been using this in medicine for a long time to carry the medicines they're giving you into different parts of your body. And one of the things that doing this does is alter or affect your DNA. And this is very troubling to me with many of the medicines that they are now giving us, particularly the injection type medicines that so many of us have been taking for various reasons, and using this mRNA system to carry it through our bodies, is that that system is changing our DNA. And there is a great deal of inner thought being given to the idea that one of the dark purposes of this is to turn us back from being advanced Homo sapiens to more animalistic behavior of our earliest days on this planet, when we were running around as Neanderthals and Cro-Magnons, and we're actually a very advanced part of the fauna on the planet, that they are now trying to turn us back to that animalistic level of thinking. So this has concerned me greatly, and it is something, a simple thing in our lives, but having major effect. And we do all have control over it. We can start with the idea of being extremely discerning about what medications we put into our bodies, or we allow to be put in our bodies. This is far more important than you think. This is not just, oh, I'll run down to Walgreens and get my annual flu jab. This is, wait a minute, what's in this flu jab? How is it affecting my body, and what are the long-term results of it? So these are simple things that we can have control of. And what I'm suggesting is that that's just one of the small things that we can do to preserve our souls for future evolution, for future development, and help our bodies at the same time. It's just one step in a direction which I feel is very important for everybody. And because it's a small and simple step, it is something which we can all do.
Okay, but I'm a little confused. Why would the powers to be try to poison people? I mean, I thought they were supposed to be helping in terms of getting us well with Big Farm and all the other.
Well, I hate to say this, Russell, but if you really believe that Big Pharma is there to help you, you're living in a dream world. Let's remember this. Not one doctor, not one hospital, not one pharmaceutical company comes out with a medication or gives you a medication and says, I promise you this will cure you. They give you things. Nobody, well, I can't say nobody because there are some very good medical practitioners out there who really would like to cure people. But the vast majority, in my opinion, of the medical profession, and particularly and totally the pharmaceutical corporations themselves, they are not interested in curing you. They are only interested in treating you. Once they've cured you, the money flow stops. You don't need their medicines anymore, so you don't get your money anymore. So long as they can keep you sick enough to keep treating you, but alive enough to keep needing the treatment, then they're doing a good job as far as they're concerned, because they're making billions of dollars out of you. So, you know, really, whenever a doctor, and I don't do much with doctors if I can help it, but whenever a doctor says to me, this is what I think is wrong with you, and this is the treatment I recommend, the simple question I ask them is, will it cure me? Will it cure the problem I've got? And when they say, well, no, it'll hold the condition steady, or it'll do this, then it's like, okay, this is about the money, not about me. So I always want to know whether they're going to cure me. And quite frankly, I've been lucky. I've not had much to do with doctors, but I've never had one that said they would cure me either. They've only said, well, this is the treatment you need. So, you know, this is simple. You remember those detective novels with Sam Spade, the detective Sam Spade? I used to love him.
Boy, that's back a thousand years ago.
Right, I know. And I used to love those stories. But his thing was always follow the money, or follow the female, or follow the money, right? And that's where we are today. Follow the money. If somebody's making a lot of money out of it, it may not be very good for you. Whatever it is, there's a likelihood that it's not very good for you.
But quite frankly, when people go to med school, or nurses go to become a nurse or practitioner or whatever, become RN, I thought they had a dedication to focus and do no harm and help us and help us stay alive and help.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You know, that is the foundation of the Hippocratic Oath for the doctors, is do no harm, you know, and I think they've forgotten, or they've probably done a delete on that little bit. I'm a registered nurse, trained in the UK, a UK registered nurse myself. So I have worked in the profession, and I do know that most of the people I ever worked with really did care about the patients and wanted to help them. Particularly the nursing staff. Very often the surgical staff, the surgeons of this world, they used to and still think that they are God, and that whatever they tell you, you know, is absolutely what you need to do. I wonder if anybody who has ever been into surgery, had to have a surgical procedure, has actually read the form that they sign, where it says two-thirds of the way down that form that I give you the right to do anything that you feel necessary. Anything that you feel necessary. Blanche, the permission to a surgeon to cut up any part of your body or do anything he likes with it without having to wake you up first from the anesthetic and ask you, is this okay? Now, most surgeons that I've ever had the privilege to work with or known personally have been men of great integrity, doing the best they could for their patients. However, that's not always true. And I did hear of a case when I first came to America, which is kind of shocking to me. a surgeon in a well-known hospital had an elderly lady, about the age I am now, and she came in for a surgical problem, an abdominal problem. So they did a laparotomy. That means they opened her up to have a look and see. He opened her up. He had a look-see. He couldn't see anything really wrong. So he said, well, let's sew her up. This lady was 88 years old, by the way. So he said, I can't see anything wrong. It's probably just, you know, her digestive system isn't as good as it used to be. Let's sew her up. And they did. And then he said, but while we've got her here, we might as well take her tonsils out. And they did a tonsillectomy on an 88-year-old patient. Now, this story was given to me by a nurse that I had met when I came to America and was actually, like me, an OR nurse. So this was absolutely incredible. Why ever would you take the tonsils out of somebody who was 88 years old? But he wasn't going to get a lot of money for doing nothing except have a look and sewing her up. So he was increasing his income by finding something else to do. This is terrible, terrible practice. And sadly, it happens more often than you think, as well as the mistakes that are made. You know, I don't know if it's true this year, but a couple of years ago, the second leading cause of death in hospitals in America was wrong medication. They gave you the wrong pills and killed you. I don't think that's good medical practice. So this taking care of our own bodies and speaking up for ourselves and demanding to know what it is you're going to do, why you're going to do it, what the result will be, and why am I taking this medication and what's in it. We have the right and we should demand these answers from doctors, not just assume they know everything and do what they tell us. We should never be doing what people in authority tell us beyond the age of about 10. By the time we're 10 years old, we should be asking questions. And as adults, we should definitely be asking questions just to protect ourselves, if nothing else.
Well, okay, but most people in the hospital, most people who have a physician and been seeing a physician for whatever ailments they have, they don't ask a lot of questions. And to read those small print, I mean, come on. When you get those three or four pages and they say sign here before an operation, who reads that small print all the time? You know what I mean?
They don't. They don't. And I never used to.
Okay.
But you should.
All right. Let's read it. Okay. Let's take some examples recently. You have this virus that's exploding across the world the last couple of years, the COVID, whatever. The governments of the world, including not only the United States, but the government even of the UK, was saying that we want you to be vaccinated, we want you to be safe. As a matter of fact, we will pay for all the vaccinations. It won't cost you anything. And as a matter of fact, we almost demand that you be vaccinated so that you be healthy and so that you won't spread it to others. Now, in the UK, this is the way they have it.
Have the vaccines, the life-saving vaccines, but they are not being used adequately everywhere. And thus, this costs, of course, an enormous health cost coming along. If you look at the numbers, we have now 77% of the adults in the European Union vaccinated, or if you take the whole population, it's 66%. And this means one-third of the European population is not vaccinated. These are 150 million people. This is a lot. And not each and everyone can be vaccinated, so there are very small children, for example, or people with special medical conditions. But the vast majority could. And therefore, I think it is understandable and appropriate to lead this discussion now, how we can encourage and potentially think about mandatory vaccination within the European Union. This needs discussion. This needs a common approach. But it is a discussion that I think has to be led.
Okay, so how do you feel about that? They said, if you haven't been vaccinated, you need to be vaccinated. And it must be mandatory now that you take your job and take your firstborn or whatever. Talk about that.
Well, how I feel, of course, is that if they come with a mandatory shot for me, I'll be facing the needle and they'll be facing the front end of my nice little gun, right? So there's no way that I will allow them to vaccinate me with either the Moderna or the AstraZeneca or the Johnson or the Pfizer vaccines, and particularly the vaccines of Pfizer and Moderna, which are Moderna's second ingredient is a poison. It's a classified, it's called 105 or 102. Is it 102 or 105? And it's classified in the pharmacopoeia as a fatal poison never to be used for humans or for veterinary purposes. You can't even use it animals that they abuse, right? So it's a deadly poison, and it's the number two ingredient in the Moderna shot. And this fall, they're coming out with, have already come out with, a beautiful new vaccine that's a combination of the Pfizer poisons and the Moderna poisons combined together. And the only trial, so far as I'm aware, the only trial they have done before giving this new combined vaccine to the public was on 6 lab mice, right? 3 of the mice were the control group, and 3 of the mice were given the shot. And all 6 mice, of course, were given COVID. The first 3 mice in the control group all got over COVID and survived. The 3 mice who got the vaccine against COVID all died. And after that, they said, okay, that's the trial. Now we start giving it to the public. So trust me, if you go out and take that shot, you do it at your own peril. Absolutely. Because these shots are not designed to protect you from COVID. In fact, they know perfectly well they will not protect you from COVID. They even tell you that. All they will do is, what they say to you is, if you get COVID after the vaccine, it won't be as bad as if you got it before the vaccine. But statistically, if you are a normally healthy person, not too sick with anything, right, there's less than a 0.3% chance, 0.3% chance that COVID will kill you, right? 97% of any normal adult getting COVID recovers 100%. It's not even a serious illness. It's like a mild bout of the flu. The few people, and these, I'm telling you things now, not just my idea because I'm against it. I'm telling you things that I have learned by reading their research, by reading what the CDC is saying and the World Health is saying, keeping up to date with all the information that is out there to the public. And what they're actually saying is that now that you have to have at least 2 and possibly as many as 4 major diseases that they're already slowly killing you, you know, like heart failure or COPD or severe diabetes or any number of diseases that are slowly, slowly wearing your body down. You've got to have at least 2 and possibly 4 of these diseases before COVID will kill you. Well, you're already dying. I had a dear, dear cousin in London who died, and they put COVID on his death certificate, but he was already dying from a cancerous disease, one of the cancers. He was next to death's door before he even got COVID, and the COVID was just too much of an overload, and in a week or two he passed away, sadly. But he was an elderly gentleman with a dying disease, and so just that extra hit on the head with COVID was too much. That's understandable. And even then, it's less than 3% of the people who get that. This is the 3%. The 3% are already dying. And the thing that they know will finish you off is putting you on a ventilator. But they put everybody on ventilators. that sounded good in the beginning because they didn't know what else to do. Let's be fair about it. So they put people on ventilators. But they know now from the research that if you put a COVID patient on a ventilator and give them that, what's it called, Resdevir, I think it is, it's a funny word, medicine, which is now the standard protocol in hospital. That's what they do. They put you on a ventilator and they give you this medicine. They know for a fact that this is 99% sure going to kill you. But the problem is that for every patient they get in the hospital, and especially the ones they put on the ventilator and give the drugs to, the hospital receives between $30,000 and $40,000. And for every day the patient is in, that's bonus money, by the way, and for every patient day the patient is in the hospital, they get $18,000 for that patient from the government, from the taxpayer. It's money that they're given, right? So, again, it's follow the money. However, whether you want to take injections or not has to be entirely an individual choice. You know, all I'm saying is that you do it at your peril. It's a very hazardous thing, and the risk to your life, in my opinion, is greater if you take the shot than it is if you don't. There is almost no risk of you dying if you get COVID and don't take the shot. There is a very high risk of you dying if you do take the shot.
Well,
so
99%,
it has to be an individual thing.
Okay, 90% of the media would say you were wrong. You know, they say that we wanted to prevent a pandemic.
I know, but
go ahead.
I'm going to say one more thing, and then I would like to change the subject because this really has to be, you know, an individual choice. And if we want to believe the lies that the government tells us, then we'll go out and take the shot. And if we are sensible, reasonably awake, thinking adults, we're going to read the research, say the government is lying to us, and not take the shot. So it's entirely everybody's own individual choice about it. But the other thing that I would say, and this is a fact, it's not an opinion, this is a fact, and I've said this before, Russell, so you've heard it. The World Health Organization, from which all others relate, they're all part of one big world healthcare tree, if you like, they put out statements that say they have eradicated disease. We all know about this. They have inoculation programs at different places all over the world for different things. And they say, okay, let's say, and the one I know about is smallpox. They did massive vaccinations for smallpox. And they do work. This was the old-style vaccination, not the new one. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. Misunderstand me, because I've taken the polio vaccine. I've taken the cholera shots. I've taken all kinds of shots because I lived and worked in a third world country. And I know the value of those shots to protect the body. Those old style shots that we used to take are not the same thing as what they're doing for COVID. This thing that they're doing for COVID is not a true vaccine at all. It's simply a chemical substance they're putting into your body. It is not a true vaccine. A true vaccine is simply the disease itself attenuated or killed off, and a small amount put into your body so your immune system recognizes it and your own immune system kills it. That's an entirely different thing to what they're doing with COVID. With COVID, COVID is totally artificial chemical stuff that they're putting into your body, and it's poisonous. It kills you eventually, right? So I was saying about smallpox. When the World Health made the statement, we have eradicated smallpox, and the whole world believes them. The whole world, we all believe that the only place there is smallpox now is in experimental level 4 labs that governments have, because the World Health eradicated it. Well, what they did and do is they have a massive program. They stop the disease in that outbreak. They cut the numbers back. The people stop getting sick. You have no more of the disease coming to the surface, and that stopped that outbreak. Now when smallpox breaks out, as it did fairly recently, I believe, in North, there is an outbreak, but they don't call it smallpox now. They call it, and if I remember rightly, it's something like pustulating eczema. That's now the new name of smallpox. In other words, the World Health does a program, stops an outbreak, changes the name of the disease. So, and then they tell you they've eradicated it. I'm going to say something which might be totally unpopular, and the whole medical profession can scream at me, but I don't care because I'm a clairvoyant, not a doctor, and I can say what I know, right? And this is what I know. No disease or virus extant on the planet that is natural, not man-made, has ever been nor ever can be eradicated, because the tiny little critters that are out there that we call bacteria and we call viruses, we call them disease makers, whatever we call them, those tiny little critters are part of the natural makeup of this planet. And we are never going to eradicate them. We can cut them back, but they will not go extinct. The same night we have programs to eliminate mosquitoes in certain places and certain parts of the country to cut back on malaria, of course. It's a great thing. But we control the mosquito population. There are billions of mosquitoes on this planet. We will never eradicate them. So just keep that in mind, that the government and the pharmaceutical companies are lying to you. And if you start off with that premise and then go from there to investigate, you will soon see the truth of it.
But here's a problem. It's a big problem. The problem is that 70% of the people in the United States have taken that shot, whether Moderna, mm-hmm. whether it's Johnson,
that's true.
Whatever. Okay.
Untrue.
Come on. What are you asking them to do then?
What I suggest, if there is anybody who is listening at all and who has taken the shots and is now, you know, either already questioning it or willing to question it, right, I suggest that they find a really good naturopathic doctor, because there are herbal treatments. If you have a really good, especially a naturopathic doctor who is experienced with Chinese medicine, because there are protocols with those, somebody who has that knowledge of those two forms of medicine, there are protocols that can mitigate the effect of the shots you've already taken. So the thing would be, don't do any more boosters, don't do any more shots, certainly not the new one that's out, because that's a real killer. And do these naturopathic protocols, which can help your body and mitigate the effects of the ones that you have already taken. You know, once you put a shot into your body, you can't get it back out. It's there. But you can slow down or mitigate its deleterious effects on the body. Kind of like, you know, when people have done chemotherapy, which is awful, right? But the poor people have done chemotherapy and they get that terrible nausea and vomiting. Well, then they can smoke marijuana. And marijuana actually affects the brain in such a way that it radically reduces the amount of nausea and suffering that they get from the chemotherapy. So if you've had shots already, find a good ND, naturopathic doctor, and ask him to help you. And I'm sure they can. I know where I live in Montana, we have a wonderful naturopathic doctor who has medicines that he puts combines things and puts it together. It's medicines and tinctures. I don't know what they are, but you take those. And they, as well, he has a wonderful one, which if you take 5 drops a day, it prevents you ever getting influenzas or COVIDs or any of those diseases. And if anybody should have COVID, 10 drops a day and it cures them. 10 drops 4 times a day and it cures them. A good number of people in this valley go to him rather than the doctors if they get sick. This works.
Right. Well, anyway, people talk, what can I say? People were talking about Lysol and malaria and whatever else that back in the day. But anyway, Nate, let him take over because he might have some questions to some of his people who do limbic arc and all those other things that they're doing, and they get that healing machine and on and on and on.
Yeah.
Deep questions and talk about the protocols that they should be using or thinking about using. Nate, are you there?
Yeah. Okay. We lost one person that was unmuted because we had some background noise. Dora is unmuted. Go ahead, Dora.
Good morning, Jillian, and good morning to the gentleman who is the commentator. I'm really enjoying this. I want to go all the way back to when you were speaking of the doctors and what happens in the hospital and how a lot of it is the treatment that they say we need is founded upon the fact that the doctor wants to make the money. It's a money industry, as we well know in this country. So I want to talk about childbirth. I think you touched on that. And I won't go all the way back to mine because I insisted on all natural, and I did have that, and it can happen, and it can be painless, but it's definitely. We didn't have limbic arc back then, but I had meditation and the breathing, and you know, just I was taught that Lamont method, and that does work. I had no medication for babies, no shots, no nothing. Anyway, I'm gonna fast forward to 12 years ago, or 8 years ago rather. No, sorry, 12 years ago, my grandson was born here in Los Angeles. And my daughter wanted to do the natural, so she started with that. And my son-in-law and I were in the delivery room. And I won't make it a long story, but she had dilated to 7 centimeters. She was laying on her back. She was, sitting up, legs up, knees up, no meds, no nothing. And every 10 minutes, the anesthesiologist would come in and say, Do you want your cocktail now? Do you want this, the shot, that's what they call the, I call it the saddle blocker, which they inject in your spine. And they kept asking her that over and over. Well, they allowed my son-in-law and myself, 2 people, to be in there in the delivery room with her, which we were. She was dilating. She was breathing. She was doing fine. It was hurting, of course, but she had it under control. Excuse me, she's a very strong athlete and a triathlon person. So she had it under control. Anyway, I had to go to the ladies' room. But every time this anesthesiologist would come in, I would say, please don't pressure her for that. She doesn't want it. If she wants it, she will definitely ask you for it. Don't allow her to make her decision and continue where she is. Anyway, fast forward, I go to the bathroom. When I come back, my son-in-law is no longer sitting in the delivery room. He's in the hallway sitting. And I said, what happened? Why are you out here? He said, she is in OR. Well, as soon as I left out, he said they told her to turn over onto her knees and hike up on her knees and palms. Immediately caused the heart rates of my grandson and hers to skyrocket, like he was going to not make it because that caused the heart rate to go up. Well, everybody should have known that. They're doctors. I knew that would cause it. I'm not a doctor. They did this on purpose. Well, later on, they ended up giving her the shot, immediately that happened, and they rushed her into C-section and didn't want us to go back in and say anything, speak to the doctors, nothing. So I find out later the doctor, the anesthesiologist, is the wife of the female physician who was her delivery doctor. They're trying to make the money. They get $10,000 right. for each time they send that injection and do it. So this is part of the medical society. And everything you said, I just want to say thank you for. I've been through the Moderna. I agree with everything you said about the Moderna. I mean, Moderna and Pfizer. I am on the county registry for meal service and caregiving. And I do know we had to get on a panel with them in the very beginning. So she's right, everyone, about what she said about the ingredients, about the fact that they don't do anything. They're for nothing. They don't help COVID. They probably cause it. But anyway, I just wanted to share that story just to let everybody know she is not just, you know, speculating on anything that she's saying today. And I really appreciate you. So I'm going to stop being long-winded and say everyone have a great day. Thank you for listening.
Well, thank you, Dora. That's very nice. It's always good to get confirmation from someone, you know, to say yes, because if I say something that is just my opinion, then I say this is just my opinion. Otherwise, I want you to know that I would not tell you something if I were not convinced it was the truth. And pretty much if it wasn't getting approved as the truth by the guiding beings that I work with in spirit, when I do these sessions with you, it's like I'm moving into my clairvoyant working mode. And I'm in touch with spirit the whole time. And believe me, they will shut my mouth in a hurry if I get off on a wrong track with something. So I'm always 99.9% sure that what I am saying is accurate. So it is good to get that confirmation, and I appreciate that call. And I'm sorry you went through that experience, or your daughter-in-law did. But yes, it is true what I'm telling you, and it's a sad state of affairs. However, having said that, if it's okay with Nate, did you have something else you wanted to ask Nate?
No, we have nobody else on mute, so go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, what I'd like to do, if we may, is switch from a little bit sideways, as it were, to say why this is so concerning to me. This that we've been talking about, this whole medical profession thing, it's my concern, personally, is the souls of every human being on this planet. That right now we are in a state of almost despair, because when I started talking about this publicly about 40-odd years ago, I actually did a talk around that time at a thing called the Global Science Research Institute. It used to be an organization that met once a year in Denver, and people came from all over the world. It was a big conference once a year, or sometimes they did it as well in a second one in Florida. But their main one was in Denver, and they were kind enough to invite me to be one of their speakers one year. And I talked about the 40%. Because at that point in time, from spirit's perspective, it was hoped and anticipated that at least 40% of all the souls on this planet at this point in time would be ready, would be developed enough and have learned enough and chosen enough to move forward into a new and different experience of living, a higher frequency of living. And that was very exciting, and it was the reason why so many extraterrestrials are crowding our planet today, coming here to take on human bodies and human experiences, because this is a phenomenal thing that has happened. And I have to say to this, it's never been seen in the universe before. Never before in the history of this universe has a race of evolved beings advanced so quickly that so many of them could be ready to move into a higher experience in such a short time. 6,000 years is no time at all, cosmically speaking. And humans have advanced so rapidly. However, that 40% over the next decade or two fell to an expectation of maybe 20%. And now we're down to hopefully 15 to 17% of Earth humans being ready. And it's not because they individually have been doing so many bad things that they have darkened their own light, that they have dimmed their own light, damaged their own souls, and fallen backwards. What has happened is that in the last 20 years, the dark side, the workers, the people, the governments, or the people behind the governments on this planet, working in collaboration, of course, with extraterrestrials, predominantly the reptilian species, so much evil has taken such a grip that people are losing control of their own lives, that they are, as fast as they're wakening up, equally fast the governments are shutting them down. So we have seen in the last, let's say, 25, 30 years, this huge rise in children, for example, who are, have this, what, ADDH or whatever it's called, where they give them drugs for it. Now, in my day, of course, I'm in my 80s, but let's say anyone over 60 well remembers that the days that when you had children who wouldn't sit still in school and misbehave themselves, they got sent to the headmaster and they got their hands whacked with a cane a couple of times and a note written sent home to their mothers, tell your child to behave themselves. And they got a good smack then when their father came home. So they got it from the teacher and they got it from their parents. In other words, I'm not advocating corporal punishment by any means. However, there is an appropriate place for strong discipline. And in the old days, when there was a mother at home to look after the children and a father coming home from work to take the brunt of it, then the children had more discipline at home and then were better behaved in schools because they knew they would be in trouble if that didn't happen. Well, sadly, in recent years, we've seen a financial and economic situation where almost always either there is only one parent at home or both parents, and they're all working. They're all gone to work every day, and the children are being shipped off to school at 7 o'clock in the morning, and they're not getting home till 6 o'clock at night, and then they have their homework to do. This is really not a normal childhood for these children, so it's not surprising that they are emotionally running wild, and that's expressed in bad behavior. But instead of really addressing this, what we've done is develop a social worker system that says, you know, nothing that they do is their fault because it's either a disease or it's bad parenting, one of the two. And the whole thing is an illness with them, and we need to give them drugs. So we have drugged a whole generation of kids in various ways. This is very destructive to the soul. This is not normal development. So now, instead of having 40% of our population ready to evolve into higher frequencies, we're down to, as I said, around the last estimate was around 17%. And how is this known? How can we know this? Well, from a perspective of those benevolent extraterrestrial beings who work in conjunction with truth, the Holy Ghost, if you like, however you perceive of that spirit. If you've ever flown at night over a big city, you see all the lights down below. You see the black earth and all the lights of the city you're flying over. Well, people are kind of like that. When you look at a person, they shine. They glow. And when the more evolved they are, the more their soul has been expanded by their own right choices, the shinier they are, the brighter they shine, the brighter they glow. And so extraterrestrial beings just simply flying over us can see which of us are shining and which of us are not. And by that means, they can judge how many of us may be ready to evolve to a higher experience of life and how many are going to be, as it were, need to be held back and do more reincarnations and more reincarnations. So this matter of taking care of our physical bodies and making right choices for our physical well-being reflects directly on our soul and our soul energy. I'm sorry, that's a huge noise in my ear. I don't know what it was, like a big bang. Sorry, wasn't me. I know it wasn't me. But it's for this reason that I'm concerned about what is happening, especially with these shots that people are given and all the other medications, of course, that we take, because when we damage our body, we can also be depleting our soul energy. And that's truly what is my main concern. I would like to see us all wake up, take charge of our lives, because in the final analysis, we are better, even if our health is not great, we are better to die and have our souls in good shape, because anybody, any physical body is not going to last at the very best more than 100 years as things are now. But our soul is eternal. It goes on and on and on and on. And we're going to have to keep doing reincarnations like mice on a wheel going round and round and round until we learn to make wise choices. That is the purpose of Earth. That is the purpose of our physical creation. Not that it's important in itself, but that it is important as a means by which we can learn and advance our soul's development so that we can stop needing to come and reincarnate over and over again and go through all the joys and pleasures and upsets and miseries of life on this planet, but so that we can move forward and reach that stage where if and when we want to come to the planet Earth, or any other planet for that matter, and experience three-dimensional sensory life where we can see, smell, touch in the physical way, then we will have evolved the capability as eternal souls of manifesting a full-grown body to experience the joys of that planet and then leave it when we're done. Not to be compelled to the rigors of rebirth, growing, learning, suffering, and dying over and over again because we haven't learned to choose wisely. And the most fundamental choice we have to make is how to look after the physical bodies. It's kind of like when you buy a car, you know you put gas in to make it go. But you also have to remember to change the oil now and then and to check the air in the tires. You have to do maintenance work. And if you don't, the car is going to break down on you and be useless to you. The same is true of your body. You have to maintain it. And obviously, as your body is a natural thing, it's a part of nature, right? Then the natural things are the best things to maintain your body with. And I am sure, Nate, that all your group of people are well aware of that because you work with the limbic arc. Now, I was not familiar with that until very recently, and I did go online and read up about it and check it, and I understand it perfectly because what you're dealing with are the basic fundamentals of frequency medicine. And frequency medicine, of course, is the future. It was the past. Lemurians were the great ones for practicing frequency medicine at the time of Atlantis and Lemuria. That was an art that was well known then. And one of their techniques, for example, was taking natural light, sunlight, and passing it through various colored glass that was imbued with gold, literal gold. And that art of being able to create that glass was lost after the 12th century. It was never made again. But it is in the great cathedrals of Notre Dame in Europe, like the one in France, the great Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. In the rose window, it has that glass in it. And that's how we know it's never been made since the 12th century. The art of it has been lost. But it is that light, sound, and vibration combining together, color, light, and sound combining together. Their frequencies can be attuned to heal anything in the body. And your limbic art that you were working with I believe it's Dr. Cook was his name, that is this beginning process of frequency medicine. It's definitely the way it's going to go in the future. So really and truly, your group of people who are working with this, you're on the cutting edge of future medicine. And I say best wishes to all of you. It's wonderful to know that you're doing this.
Nate, back to you.
Okay, we have 973-961 that had unmuted. I muted you back because it has background noise, so go ahead.
Peace and blessings to the family out there. Forrest Nance, grown folks talking, express yourself. Nate and Sister Green, I apologize. Sister, I was washing my juicer out. I thought I was on mute, so that was that knifing noise you thought you heard. I apologize. But I'd like to say peace and blessings, and brother, and the same to Brother Rush, too, all right? I just want to give you two guys a shout-out because family that's listening out there, these two wonderful people were on my podcast on Saturday evening, all right? One's for Brother Nate. I would have never met them, but I just want to say thank you once again for coming on Grown Folks, and we look forward to having you back again. And also, Sister Green, Marva's going to reach out to you through Brother Russ. She said she was trying to connect with him. I gave Sister Marva Russ's number. So
yes.
You remember the lady that you talked
yes.
to. You said, so she should be in contact with you, I guess, through Russ. You know, I just want to thank you. And Sister Marva may be listening, so she may want to say hello because when I heard you guys talking, when I chimed in about 20 minutes ago, I called Marva. I said, they're on. She said, who? I said, Russ and Sister Jillian, so they're on. So she said, okay. So she should be listening. I don't know if if Nate's going to unmute her. She said, star, Marva. But thank you once again for that very, very powerful message and that information. Peace and blessings to you. Thanks, Nate. Brother Russ, thank you. And Sister Jillian, keep up the good work.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have Philadelphia 215-715. Just unmute it.
Yes. Greetings. Greetings, Sister Green, Brother Russ. This is Marva Crafton. And caught the tail end of what you were saying. It's an honor. It's an honor to listen. And I'm looking forward to dialoguing with you. My mindset is right there with you. And I'm just very, very elated. And I did reach out to Russ. I gave him my phone number because he said that, you know, you were retired. And I tried to explain to him that, you know, you had said that, you know, you would like to talk to me.
Yeah, she
hopefully,
has
it.
I have
your number, Marva, and I will call you as soon as I get a chance to. Thank you for giving it to Russ. He did pass it on to me, so I do have it. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we have Jeannie unmuted. Go ahead, Jeannie.
Okay, thank you so much. Dr. Green, thank you so much for this information. I had a question regarding spinal anesthesia for mothers that were giving birth. And I wanted to know, you were an RN, and I wanted to know if you felt that a lot of this spinal anesthesia is responsible for ADD in children, adult deficit disorder. And I'm very curious to know if they knew that this drug would cause children to be highly hyper and attention deficit disorder. I did get a spinal anesthesia with my son. This was back in the 60s. And it resulted in him becoming ADD. And, of course, I didn't know anything before he got to kindergarten. When he got to kindergarten, I could see the difference. It was like he was driven. You know, he would be racing about in the classroom and all of that, all of those things. And in order for me to keep him in school, they requested or required that I put him on Ritalin. And after I put him on Ritalin, it did calm him down, but I realized that he was drugged. You could tell by his eyes. So I just want to know, I believe that the spinal anesthesia caused this problem for my son. And I just wanted to know.
Well, that's a really good question, and the truthful answer is I have no idea. In the days when I was nursing, remember, I'm in my 80s now, so my nursing days were a long, long time ago. And spinal, also, I was nursing first in the UK in England, where at that time, the vast majority of baby births were home births. Still are a large percentage in the UK today. Midwives delivered most of the babies at home, as they still do in the UK. And so spinals were very rare because you had to be in a hospital with a doctor in order to get a spinal. Nurses did not do that. So to answer that part of your question, whether it caused a future problem, I honestly have no idea. I don't know. I'm not saying it's not possible, but I would say, to be quite honest, let me tell you another story. And I certainly think Ritalin's a bad idea for children, right? But it does drug them down, of course, and that's been a big thing. You know, drug the kids down so that nobody has a problem to them. I would think that a big part of the problem is overcrowding in classrooms, teachers not being allowed to discipline the children. You know, there's a lot of components going to bad behavior, as well as actual problems with an individual child. So that would be a whole big discussion that I'm really not qualified to get into by any means. But there is another thought that I would put out there, and you know your own child better than anybody else. There are many, many children, now adults, right, that have been coming to this planet in droves since the end of World War II. And this is also, excuse me, let me get a little drink here. It's a funny thing, I think it's nerves. I seem to always get croaky when I know I'm going to be on a touchy subject. So I guess I'm moving into a touchy subject, right? We have seen since World War II, and certainly in the last 25, 30 years, this massive increase in everything to do with sex and gender identities, right? Homosexuals, lesbians, transgender, whatever they are, right? This has been a really big thing post-World War II, and certainly in the last 25 to 35 years, massive increase. What I'm going to say might sound a bit crazy, but since World War II, what we have seen arriving on this planet are hundreds of thousands of souls who had already advanced to a level as souls where they no longer needed to come to planet Earth. They had evolved beyond the need for Earth itself. And when they had evolved to that high level of experience, they had also evolved beyond the need for male-female conflict. However you look at it, men are one thing and women are another. We're two different species. And there is always conflict between the two because the relationship is about learning conflict resolution. That's why we have, you know, the opposing sides, the male, the female side, and we're trying to find a happy medium down the middle. So this is sort of fundamental to the understanding that these beings are so highly evolved that they no longer need that experience. However, when they are born, two things have happened to them. One, the vast majority of them have been born just like normal humans. When they've passed through that veil of rebirth into life on this planet, they have forgotten who they are. They have lost the continuation of their consciousness. They're starting out fresh. So they don't remember who they are. And all their awareness as they grow and become adults is that they don't want conflict with the opposite sex, but they do want loving relationships in their lives. They may even want sexual relationships in their lives, and therefore they turn to their own sex. Now, this accounts today for the vast majority of people in the what they call the gay pride movement, or whatever it is they call it as a movement. I'm not up to date with what they call it all. But the vast number of people who are now choosing same-sex relationships fit, believe it or not, they fit into that category. Actual, true homosexual or lesbian experiencing people who do so through some kind of mistake in nature, you know, too many chromosomes of X's or Y's or whatever, those are less than 2%. What you would call true homosexuals, they are less than 2 or 3% of the whole gay population. The majority of them are very highly evolved beings who came at this time in history because humanity is running out of time. We're at the end, in 2 or 3 years, we're at the end of this particular time cycle for human experience. This is all these massive changes, and this is when humanity is choosing for its future totally. Is it going to be on the side of the light, the good, the creative, the forward-moving, or is it going to choose the dark side, the demonic side, the side which is really going down into the pits, right? We are making those choices. We're making them every day. We've been making them in a major way since 1998, which was the time when individuals had pretty well decided in their mind which way they were going to go, and now we're into the fine-tuning of trying to change the minds of those who are going downhill and at the same time moving forward those who are climbing up the hill, as it were. And so all these gay people that are out there, whether one religiously or spiritually approves or disapproves of that kind of behavior in life, just keep in mind that the vast majority of them are very evolved souls who have simply forgotten what they originally came for. But when they have the experience in life, as, you know, Saul did on the road to Damascus, when they have some event in their lives which triggers their brain and they remember, they reawaken to their purpose, then you will find them doing the good works. And if you look at it around now and you look at all your gay friends and people that you know who are living a gay lifestyle, you will find that the vast majority of them are actually in service-related workplaces. And not just, you know, like doctors and nurses and things, but they are also, you'll find them at all the church events where they're doing soup kitchens or homeless, helping the homeless things. They are choosing service when they awaken to why they are here. So I think it's important that we're aware of that, because not everybody approves of that lifestyle. And it's the old story, you know, somewhere in the Bible it tells us, I think, that you never know when you're running into angels. That's it. It can surprise you sometimes. So I think that a lot of these children who are now apparently out of control in their childhood, or indeed they're either out of control being too out there, or they've gone the other way into autism. I think large numbers of them, probably almost all of them, are these souls who have come from a higher level with higher knowledge, and because of the birth process, they have forgotten. But they will wake up to it at some time in their lives, and we can see that change in those who have woken up to it and are doing all these good and service-related things. Does that make any sense in relation to what you know, Jenny?
You were talking to
Hello,
Nate?
Hello, anybody out there?
Yeah, who were you talking to, Nate?
Well, I was asking the lady if that made any sense to her in what she knew of her own son, that she was, you know, had had the ADD problem.
Oh, okay, well, I had muted her out. She's unmuted now, so go ahead, Jenny.
Oh, you heard. Okay.
Okay, I'm sorry, doctor. What was your question? Or
she was saying,
no,
what she say make any sense
asking,
to you?
Oh yes, it was just such a. I was surprised to know that you had brought that subject up because I went through such a. You know, I had 26 years of. ADD, and of course, you know, it started off ADD, and then recently they added H for hyper, ADHD, and now we're finding out that there's a adult ADD. So, you know, you just wonder what causes that, and then of course, Ritalin is a very dangerous drug. So
right,
I just always wanted to know if they knew early on that the spinal anesthesia would cause problems. And also myself, I was also a victim because my hip was numb in that area for almost a year. So very dangerous.
Okay, all those drugs that they give you that numb the nervous system are always dangerous. You never know what the long-term results are going to be or how they're going to affect the rest of the body, especially the spinal that they give, the epidural that they give for childbirth, because that's actually going into your spinal fluid. So it can be very dangerous.
Okay.
But
okay,
ADD, I don't know.
Okay, actually, we're out of time. We have two other people unmuted. Do you have time to answer a couple more questions or comment on?
Oh, sure. I'll try to be a bit faster, right, Nate? Yes, let's see if we can get some short answers. Sorry.
Okay, Aisha, go ahead and make it short because, like I said, we're out of time. So go ahead.
I'll take it as brief as I can with all the other long-winded questions and answers. But thank you, Jeannie. I thank you, Russell. I thank all the Olympic Art family. You know, these vaccines or these, you know, germ warfare, you know, I don't know about World War II, but I'll just say this. You know, there has been a system that has affected the whole society with the homosexuality, whether it's chemtrails, whether it's anesthesia at birth because of more money with the C-sections, autism is on the rise since, you know, the mercury in the vaccines and things that they've given our children. The Ritalin has feminized the male child. You know, you want to subdue natural behavior that because you want a class to run smoothly and you get more money with special education. So, yes, all of these things affect us when we're not in alignment, as you were saying, about the soul. So, I mean, there are books like Kill Them Before They're Born. I don't know who the author is, but I do remember the title. And as far as the programming or deprogramming, you know, there was a telly-tellies that border on seizures, and my daughter has seizures, and the seizure medication affected some of her children with the autism and messed with their teeth and things of that nature. So anything that's a chemical and that's made up and brought back into the body, it has an effect on the DNA, it has an effect on the RNA, and we're all aware that this is going on. But I just thank you, Jeannie, because Ms. Gillard, because Jillian, because you are such a sweet soul that wants to bring enlightenment and awareness and consciousness to the world. And whatever form that we bring it in, whether it's Reiki, whether it's Olympic art, whether it's AO scan, you know, like you say, we're highly evolved creatures, and we know the spiritual laws. And when we go against them, then these are the side effects of it, whether it's Simon and Gomorrah, or whether it's, you know, whatever's going on now with population control in the UN and Area 51. We just have to be aware, cross our T's, dot our I's, and do the best that we can with the clean water, with the proper foods, something that's going to give you all the nutrients and things that we need, you know, and be thankful for this entanglement that we're in. And I appreciate all of you on this call. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Aisha. Okay, last caller, Dora, go ahead.
Hi, Jillian, again, and everybody, just as Aisha said, I want to thank everybody. But I want to thank you for sharing what you shared about the spirits of homosexuality and how they are on the planet now. When they came and when I started noticing, everything you said is exactly the questions that I've had going through my mind for many years. I want to thank you for clearing up so much stuff. Thank you for the information with the ADHD and everything that's happened. I have a young family member whose mom and dad have put him on. I'm going to check and see the name of the meds if I can. But, yeah, he's been such a brilliant, brilliant child. 12 years old, he's already working on his second book. This kid is just unbelievable. So, yeah, I'm going to check on that. But I've been noticing the same thing and questioning the same thing about the homosexual or whatever, the gay community. And I do notice that they don't need us. They're on a whole different frequency. And, yes, they are in the service industry. I'm in the service industry, and I see them, and they're very comfortable here. Whether they're allowed to openly do whatever, that's just who they are, and they're comfortable with that. And I felt like now that I'm a member of this awareness through Olympic Arc, and so grateful to Nate and Dr. Reb and my son who brought me here. I'm just grateful because I have so many questions running through my head for years, and now I'm just getting all the answers, and I thank you because I think that we are all brought together just as they are. So we're from the same solar system too, obviously, and that's all I wanted to say is just thank you. I'm learning so much and confirming so much that I've already felt most of my life. So thank you very much, and have a great day, everyone.
Thank you, Dora. Okay.
All right, Russ, Jillian, go ahead and close out whatever comments you want to make. We're over time, but whatever time it takes you to finish, go ahead.
For me, I think that was fine. I think we have touched on quite a number of things, and your group come up with some interesting thoughts. You know, they introduced me to researching Limbic Arc, and so I am getting a great deal of learning myself out of touching base with your group in these conversations, and I thank you for that, and I thank you for allowing me to express my views as well. I appreciate it, Nate, and thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you, and thank Russ, and you're welcome back anytime you please. I know Russ said that it's early in the morning for you when we start, but you're welcome at any time.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Russell, have you anything you want to say?
No. I was just kind of listening because you guys were on target. And I appreciate Nate giving us time to, you know, answer a few questions that people might have. So thanks, Nate.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for being here today. We look forward to seeing you again. Tomorrow we will talk about the right of self-determination. We have international attorney on, David Williams, and that's usually an interesting conversation. We get into law sometimes, a lot of times. We also get into health and wellness. I'm surprised that David has a wealth of information about health and wellness that we have been sharing lately. So check with us tomorrow. And Wednesday, we're asking everyone to come on Wednesday. Dan and Liara, Dan and Jillian remind me of brothers and sisters because they're on the same wavelength pretty much. They talk about many of the same things. I've had private conversations with Dan over the years, and his conversation is very similar to Jillian's conversation. But the powers that be don't generally like a lot of information shared among people. They want us to remain in the dark, want us to remain ignorant, so to speak. So when Dan gets out and starts to talk about these things, he gets harassed by the powers that be. He's had threats to his life, threats to his children's lives. And actually what's happened is that after he started, he had really retired from even being in conversations. I asked Dan if he would come on and share his information with our group. And I think he's been with us for close to 3 years and shared a lot of information with us. And I guess he was discovered, and now he's again getting, you know, a little subliminal, and not necessarily subliminal, but messages that the threats and things are coming back. So he decided he would step back. But Wednesday he's going to be on, and we just asking everybody to come on, at least thank Dan for the information he shared with us for the last 3 years. So that's it for today. And thank everybody for being here. Russ, you have any final comment?
No, there's a 2-minute clip by a young lady called Jillian Green about...
And I totally agree with that. We should all be ruling ourselves. We shouldn't need rulers. We shouldn't need anybody telling us what to do. We've been told over and over again throughout history, not just 2,500 years ago, but many other times in history, of how to become fully enlightened beings living in perfection as beings on this planet, being the actual shining stars that every soul really is, instead of which most people, and this is true today, so much today, we're seeing it all the time, most people choose to put themselves in the victim mode. They like to be presenting themselves, oh, I'm a victim. I'm a victim of what the government does. I'm a victim of what this disease is doing. I'm a victim of what other people is telling me. And I'm saying, no, stand up and be yourself, because the opportunity has always been there for you, and it's never too late to claim it. Even as, you know, it's like this last deathbed confession, it really never is too late to wake up and to say, yeah, I get it, and I'm going to shine, and I'm going to be this holy, bright, enlightened person, because the light is constantly streaming from the source towards us. All we have to do is open our eyes and let it in. And this is a very literal thing. This is not a philosophical discussion type thing. This is an actuality. The energy, the life force of the universe is literally flowing out there in the light, and we can take it in and be enlightened beings. Everybody can. And then, you know, if everybody became enlightened, we wouldn't need anybody telling us what to do, because we would always be choosing to do the right thing. And that's really all life is about. You know, when I worked for years as a clairvoyant, people would invariably ask me, well, what is God's purpose for me? And I said, well, if you need to think of it in that way, the only purpose is to become completely the best self that you can possibly be. And that's your choice by making wise choices time after time, lifetime after lifetime. And it isn't as if we have to do this in a hurry. We have tens of thousands of years in which to do it. And as I said before, 10% of this population on this planet, the Earth population, have done it. they have become incredibly enlightened beings, far, way ahead. I mean, I think just off the top of my head of a dozen people that I know that are light years ahead of where I would ever be in spiritual enlightenment, really, really connected beings. And it's phenomenal.
So thank you.
All right. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Russ. So everyone have a great day. We've enjoyed the conversation today, and we look forward to seeing you guys again. So have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you, Nate.
The organizer has ended this meeting. Goodbye.
So is Jillian still there? No, she's gone. Let's see. Let me close it out with this. Let's see where we are now. George Green will close us out. 3 seconds. George, thank you.
And don't look for anybody out here to save you other than yourself. You know, even Christ said that. He said, what I do, you can do and greater. And what you sow, you shall reap.
Okay. All right. See you next time. See you tomorrow. Same place, right here on Blog Talk Radio.